This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and it's time to wrap up today by looking back at the week. And it was a week with a lot of folks going toe-to-toe. First, Beacon Hill legislators put forward their transportation plan, one which Governor Patrick says he'll veto outright.
And above all, the middle class in Massachusetts need better jobs and a stronger economy, and need it sooner rather than later. My proposal provides that. The leadership's proposal does not.
Also, a Connolly, a Conley, and a Consalvo in the Boston mayor's race.
Because I'm the first politician in my 40 years in Boston who's actually going to focus on the schools.
I like to think of myself as someone who is deliberative and listens very carefully to lots of voices.
My vision and my record as a city councilor in bringing new ideas.
Plus, following a Globe investigative series, Mayor Tom Menino takes on the Hackney Division at the Boston Police Department. Or, as the Boston Taxi Drivers Association calls it,
a dysfunctional, mismanaged agency that takes earnings away from workers and gives it to millionaires.
Joining us now to dig into all of these stories is Callum Borchers, business and politics reporter for the Boston Globe. Hi there, Callum.
Hi, Meghna. Great to be here.
It's great to have you back. Also with us today is David Bernstein, former political writer for the Boston Phoenix, but still doing great political reporting here in Boston. David, great to have you.
Oh, good to be here.
All right. So let's start off with those dueling transportation plans that we talked about. As we all know, the governor put out a $1.9 billion revenue plan that would address transportation and education needs a little while ago. And then recently this week, Senate President Therese Murray and House Speaker Robert DeLeo teamed up to present a $500 million plan for transportation only. They're looking to raise gas taxes, tobacco and business-related taxes. But the problem is the governor doesn't like it. He actually says it's going to slow down the growth that the state's middle class actually needs. Speaker Robert DeLeo, he totally begs to differ. Let's listen.
It's not the House and the Senate plan that is talking about the increase in the income tax. It's not the House and Senate plan that is talking about elimination of many of the deductions that people presently get, whether they be for education, whether they be for the selling of their home and the like. So I think our plan is the one that addresses the concerns of those most needy, namely the middle class.
Okay, Callum, so let's start with you. We've been at these loggerheads before between the governor and Beacon Hill leadership, but what do you make of this particular difference in plans and vision for transportation in Massachusetts?
Well, there's a lot of middle ground to meet in, isn't there? I mean, yeah. Patrick's plan is almost four times the size in terms of spending as the legislature's. Obviously, one major difference, you heard it there, is the income tax. Patrick would raise it to 6.25 while lowering the sales tax, we should note, to 4.5. Speaker DeLeo worries about the state's credit rating, too, though, if you raise the sales tax, or the income tax, rather. So that's one thing. I think an obvious starting point for compromise would be that $800 million plan that we had earlier last month from the Mass Taxpayers Foundation. And the Business Roundtable, and they sort of lined up with the legislature in saying that one big problem is that MassDOT salaries since the 90s have been paid from bond funds. That's borrowed money. Mm. And the foundation said that should really be a priority to move it to the operating budget. They said as soon as practical. Legislators say that's 3 years. Patrick says 10 years, so there might have to be some bending there.
I know on the other hand, though, for some of the organizations within MassDOT, like the MBTA, the part of the reason why salaries were coming out of bond funds is because the operating funds were being consumed by debt servicing. This is a problem. This is a structural problem.
Yes, it is. It's sort of a chicken or egg thing, in a way, isn't it? I mean, how do you fix one without raising more revenue over on this other side? And I think that would probably be Patrick's counterargument, is, look, $500 million just isn't going to cut it, and 3 years isn't realistic, especially at that spending level.
Right. David, what's your take?
Well, one thing you have to remember on the political side is that you're dealing with, on one side, 200 legislators who are all up for re-election next year, and on the other side, a governor who is never going to put his name on a ballot again, and or certainly not running for re-election next year. So you can guess which one doesn't want to be stuck with raising the taxes. I think that's a big part of it. I think that the column's exactly right. There's a lot of middle ground. It's just not really clear that there is a desire to spend the time and effort negotiating to get there. When you see that the House and Senate got together to present sort of this finished plan in a way that sort of that clearly took the governor by surprise. Mm. And sort of left him hanging there. And I think that really what it comes down to is the legislature is saying, is not willing to raise taxes. You know, is willing to do little things here and there that people might not complain too much about. You know, the gas tax, cigarette tax. You know, which I'm a little baffled about the entire notion of let's, you know, fix our transportation systems by taxing cigars. You know, I'm not quite sure what the logic is there. But, you know, from the Patrick administration point of view, it is a strong argument of if you want to actually get the state moving forward, you know, in sort of a developmental way going forward, you have to make some investment in these kinds of transportation infrastructure things. And by cutting the dollar amount, to them, it's not just a matter of doing less of that infrastructure. It's really being able to only do the basic things, like Colin was saying, of, you know, moving the salaries off of the capital payroll
and back onto the operating budget
and getting rid of some of the debt, and you're really not going to be able to do anything positive.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit more, or let's hear actually from the governor himself, because as you very aptly pointed out, he's the one who doesn't have to run again, or said he's not going to. And so this week he also said he's going to flat out veto the legislators' plans if it actually makes it to his desk. Here he is on WBUR's Morning Edition.
You know, I'm not looking for a standoff here. I'm looking for a compromise and a conversation. I've been clear since I first announced the plan that I was open to compromise, both in terms of the total dollar figure and the ways to raise that dollar figure, so long as what we were doing was providing real solutions. To me, it's just not a real solution. It's a pretend solution.
Okay, Callum, so this actually gets me to circle back to what you were saying earlier. You say there's a lot of room for compromise. I mean, obviously, because the visions are on opposite poles, essentially. Do you think they can and will compromise, or could we come out of this with no transportation plan at all?
I suspect there will be some compromise. I think that there's sufficient momentum on both sides. Clearly, both sides want to get this done, but the dollar figure is very far apart. I think the big sticking point, Meghna, probably will be that income tax. And the fact that the governor said just in that clip you heard, he's open to hearing other ideas about how to raise that revenue. You know, if that $1.9 billion figure gets lower, perhaps he feels like he doesn't have to raise the income tax quite as high, or perhaps not at all. You know, the concerns about the state's credit rating is one thing. And then, you know, as David said, also the politics are very important.
But Callum, on that, I mean, I wonder, because Governor Patrick said he fashioned his plan with raising the income tax and reducing the sales tax, because
right.
He believes overall that's a more progressive structure. The House and Senate plan have an increase in the gas tax, which will then, beginning in 2015, be pegged to inflation. A lot of people look at that as a consumption tax and say that disproportionately hits lower income people here. So, I mean, there's a difference in vision in terms of who's suffering the impact from various or increase in different types of taxes.
Yeah, it's a terrific point. I guess the counter argument would be that, you know, the gas tax, when you total that, I saw the estimate for the average impact on a taxpayer ranging from $12 to $30 a year. So, I mean, there's no question that, you know, raising the income tax, you're obviously, you know, hitting higher earners harder in that sense. So it is definitely more progressive in that way. But I think the governor would probably come back and say, you know, we'll look at this other thing. It's just such a small impact.
Yeah. Well, let's move on, if we can, to the mayor's race for the city of Boston. As of today, we have a Connolly, as in John Connolly, a Conley, and a Consalvo. It's going to be difficult for we radio folks in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah, good luck.
So, David, let me get your take about the gentlemen who've thrown their hats into the ring so far. How do you see things playing out between the three C's?
Well, you know, they're just the first to get in. There are more coming, and you know, they have decided to get out there as quickly as possible. You know, in part to sort of try to set the field for others making their decision. John Connolly, of course, was out there much earlier. He was ready to run against the mayor on a one-on-one, and I really think expected to run one-on-one against the mayor, expected the mayor to run for re-election. And it kind of feels to me like a guy who showed up to to shoot hoops and found himself in a hockey game, and he's kind of having to rethink his entire campaign from the ground up because he's in an entirely different game than he expected to be in. And then Dan Conley and Rob Consalvo, both very good politicians and have very strong bases of support. And they've sort of been waiting. Neither one of them would ever have run against the mayor, both because they didn't think they could beat him, but also because they respect and work well with the mayor. This is their chance. But this is the big chance, for everyone in the city who's been waiting. And there's going to be a lot of competition. And these are just the first ones trying to set their names out there first.
Well, let me ask you about that, because no woman yet so far, no murmurings as far as I know from Ayanna Pressley, no representative from the city's African-American community. I mean, are we likely to see voices and candidates from those, major constituencies in Boston?
Well, I think that is the biggest surprise so far, is the lack of diversity, and I think that the lack of it, the glaring lack of it, and the glaring openings because of it, are going to tempt some folks to look at and get in. I can tell you that Ayanna Pressley is now having very serious conversations with her core people about how realistic it may be and whether she wants to get into it after initially really not thinking that she was going to do so. I think that there are others out there, certainly Robert Louis Jr., in terms of the African-American community, not as well known, not an office holder, but a very strong potential candidate, is seriously looking at it. And, the longer that there is that opening, the more people are going to look at it. And just very quickly, I would say that part of the lack of diversity is not entirely just because there aren't good candidates, but just weird timing things where Linda Dorsina-Forey, Andrea Cabral, and a number of others who you would have expected to be in the next mayor's race can't be for various reasons.
Yeah. And so, Callum, what's your take on this? On the one hand, we are in April and the election isn't for a while. But on the other hand, organizing a campaign, even at the city level, takes time and effort and getting your name and your people out there. So who do you think remains who might jump in here?
Well, it's a great question. As far as the diversity question goes, one of the obvious ones that we didn't mention yet who has already turned down is State Senator Sonia Chang Diaz. She looked like she could be a contender, but she said she's not going to run. She's got a baby on the way and says the timing isn't right for her. I guess you could...
Tito Jackson has also said he's not going to run.
Correct. One who I haven't seen sort of indicate one way or the other strongly is Andrea Cabral, the State Secretary of Public Safety, former Suffolk County Sheriff. She might be a viable candidate now if she throws her hat in the ring. She's obviously got very strong law enforcement credentials. She's fairly well known within the city, and now she has some administrative experience, so that might be a possibility as well.
Okay. Well, finally, let's turn to the aftermath of the big three-part Boston Globe investigative series on the taxi industry in Massachusetts, specifically in the city. It revealed corruption, very difficult lives for drivers, and the fact that just a handful of people really benefit from the way the medallion system is regulated in Boston. And that got a lot of reaction from folks. So here's Donna Blythe-Smith. She's a representative for the Boston Taxi Drivers Association. She was speaking at a news conference in South Boston on Tuesday.
While Boston taxi drivers are subjected to punishing hackney regulations and industry exploitation, taxi garages and multi-medallion owners have made tens of millions of dollars off the backs of drivers. Today, we call for a complete overhaul of this corrupt and exploitive system.
Mayor Tom Menino has said he's going to look into the Hackney division. So, Callum, let's start with you. How much change do you think the mayor may be motivated to make here?
Well, I think that there's a couple of very specific things that were raised by the reporting that the Globe Spotlight team that could probably be addressed fairly quickly. I mean, one big obvious one is that it's just ludicrous that there's a $20,000 minimum to the damage insurance that these Hackney companies have to carry. Bicycle couriers need $50,000, for heaven's sakes. I mean, that's one easy thing you could do. Another would be to go to an annual license fee instead of purchasing these medallions, which are now costing in the neighborhood of $600,000. It's a prohibitive cost for any actual driver to be an owner and operator at the same time. And then the third key
Callum, let me jump in there. That change, though, would be massive. It would completely change how the taxi industry is run in Boston.
It absolutely would. And the other thing that probably have to go with it, too, would be increasing the number of taxis. I mean, keep in mind, we've got 1,825 today. That's only 300 more than we had in the 1930s. So the growth rate has just been incredibly slow. There's something like three or four drivers for every cab right now. So there's just this huge disparity on that. You're right. It would be a massive overhaul.
Yeah. So, David, what's your take on this? I mean, this is a longstanding story in the city of Boston. And good on the Globe for digging deep into it. But I'm wondering what you think about the likelihood of an overhaul of the taxi system.
Well, it will be interesting to watch, how much weight the mayor wants to put into this. It's interesting in this city, there are a lot of things like this, a lot of sort of systems in place. I think of the the liquor licensing as another one, where a system that makes some sense in a lot of ways and for a lot of reasons, ends up over time working against everyone else, sort of all the little people being able to get into it. You know, it ends up just sort of favoring the people who got in originally and those who have the money, the real resources to buy in, and works against everybody else and in many ways the city's interests. And, this city can be very conservative, small-c conservative in the sense of wanting to uproot and change things. You know, we can't even get the T's to be running late at night, let alone have, major changes, within, that reach deep into big institutions like the police department and so on. It's a tough one to crack, as obvious as it may look.
Well, we've just got, under 2 minutes to go. But I do want to give you guys just a little bit of time to share your hubbubs for this week. So, David, briefly, first to you.
Sure. Mine is the lost flute. Berklee College music student left a $4,000 flute on a park bench on a station bench in Park Station. And there's something about this that I don't know if it speaks to me, because we all have this this image that could be us, as a kid leaving our instrument on somewhere. But there's something that's wrong about it. You feel like someone should have picked it up and turned it in, and instead they've just released the MBTA has released a picture of a guy who supposedly took it and stole it and perhaps tried to sell it. There's something more disturbing for me about this incident than the stuff on the front page of the Herald about the occasional people stealing your phones, which for some reason feels like it's going to happen in a big city, but this feels like it shouldn't happen.
And Callum, what's your hubbub for today?
Well, I thought, Megan, that it was a particularly slimy week in sports, more so than usual. We had the outlandish behavior / abuse by Rutgers basketball coach Mike Rice, right? And then we had Auburn University changing football players' grades to keep them eligible during their national championship season a couple years ago. I thought those overshadowed two bold predictions that I wanted to highlight. The first one came from Baltimore Ravens linebacker Brendan Iyanbidehu, who claims there are four gay NFL players who are thinking about coming out together, and he says they might do it soon. And then the second one came from Miami Heat forward Shane Battier, who predicts there will one day be a female basketball player in the NBA. Mavericks owner Mark Cuban says he might draft Brittany Griner, so it could happen this year. Who knows?
Wow. Okay. Well, you guys always open my eyes to these stories that I hadn't heard. And I'm afraid that because of the greedy way I ran this segment, I am not going to be able to share my hubbub. But listeners, if you want to know what it is, in the next, 20-25 minutes, I will post it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/radioboston. On that note, Callum Borchers, business reporter for the Boston Globe, always great to have you. Thanks so much.
Thanks. It was fun.
And David Bernstein, former political writer, but still political nose to the ground for Boston. Thanks so much for joining us, David.
My pleasure.
Have a great weekend, everyone. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.